Konnichiwa.
Hi, I'm Tars Tarkas from TarsTarkas.net.
And I'm Todd Statman from Die Danger, Die Die Kill, aka 40K.
And this is another episode of the Infernal Brains podcast. And today we have another very special episode of the Infernal Brains, where we're detailing one of the rarer, if not the rarest, of the Toho-affiliated giant monster movies, or Daikaiju Igas, if you're one of those type of people.
Oh, good. I'm glad you went for the Daikaiju Iga on that one. I was sort of in suspense about that, because I think I want to go full nerd on this one. So. It's
Daigoro versus Goliath, or Kaiju Daifunen Daigoro Taigoraisu.
Well spoken, Tars Tarkas-san.
Yep, which is literally great desperate monster battle, Daigoro versus Goliath.
Not a lot of desperation in this movie.
No.
At least not. I mean, maybe on our part as viewers, but not so much on...
A little bit of an oversell there.
Yeah. Now, I'm in the mood to make some really unfounded generalizations tonight, but it would be good if, you know, they were actually accurate too. But my impression of this movie is that it is one of the only, if not the only, Toho giant monster films that didn't have any kind of English language release, be it a theatrical or an American television release. I don't think it was ever dubbed. Is that your take on it, Tars?
I believe so. Like, I'm not 100% sure, but from just my knowledge, it's the rarest of it's the only unreleased Toho one, although there's, you know, a few others that are a little bit more obscure, but they're not Toho affiliated.
Right. There may be some sort of also ran or smaller companies that did other ones that we haven't heard of yet, which is exciting. But I mean, I didn't hear about this movie till maybe 2 or 3 years ago. And I think I got a copy of it from All Clues, No Solutions. And I was kind of aghast when I found out about it, because I don't consider myself, you know, a kaiju movie expert so much, but I'm definitely a fan. And I think you know, if I haven't seen everything, all of the major feature films in the genre, I at least felt like I knew about all of them. You know, the ones I hadn't seen, I felt like I knew about. But then I found out about this film, Daigoro versus Goliath, and I had never heard of it. And so I, of course, got a copy of it, and then I watched it. And once you see it, you kind of understand why you might never have heard of it.
Yeah, I had not heard of it until a couple of years ago when I saw it listed on a site that just listed bootleg DVDs, because I like to read those sites just for, you know, all the stuff they list, just so I can learn about new stuff to look for, and like that.
Right, because of course the Infernal Brains would never, ever purchase bootleg DVDs, ever, just research purposes.
And so it was one of the lists of the weird Japanese stuff, weird Japanese giant monster things that I hadn't heard of till I started seeing them on those lists. And I eventually got a copy and found out more about it. And it's basically kids movie, and not for the level of the Godzilla children's films where Megalon and all them are running around. This is like for kids that aren't old enough for those drama filled things that might scare them. So
yeah. What I think about this movie is that anybody who bemoans what happened to the Godzilla movies in the 70s, and I mean, it seems like people don't hate on Jun Fukuda as vehemently as they used to, but the people who hate the Jun Fukuda Godzilla movies because they're too childish. This is for people that don't know, there was basically a conscious decision at the dawn of the 70s on the part of Toho and the producers of the Godzilla movies to orient them more towards children, that from that point on they were going to go for a child audience, in part because of part of it was because the Godzilla movies weren't making as much money. And so that was one way to go cheap with them, because I assume the assumption that children were a less discriminating audience, but also because of the popularity of the Gamera films, which from the start were geared towards children, and which were also cheap.
Yeah, just a tad.
Just a tad. But you know, people who bemoan what films like, you know, Godzilla's Revenge, you know, Godzilla versus Megalon, which indeed were childish, really should see Daigoro versus Goliath just so they could see how far yeah. it could have gone, just how bad it could have been, basically, because like you said, those films, even a film like Godzilla versus Megalon, which is, hands down the most juvenile Godzilla movie ever made, has like a level of, you know, tension that is compared to this movie.
Like the protagonists are in danger at one or two points. And in this one, there's like, the danger is, you know, maybe being too close to the toilet when the monster is going to the bathroom.
Right, when Daigoro. Yeah. It's a tonal shift, definitely. I mean, even in the most childish Godzilla or Gamera movies, there's always effort made to establish an air of portent. You know, there's always there's some suspense. There's some kind of, you know, atmospheric anomaly or some kind of something going on that heralds the eventual arrival of the threat of the evil monster. In this movie, in Daigoro, this movie really, the tone of it is more like Chitty Chitty mm-hmm. Bang Bang or something like that. It's very much like a kiddie matinee type of film. So there really, it seems like a lot of effort was expended in the opposite direction to make it as unthreatening and unscary as possible and as cartoonish. So there's a lot of whimsy, you know, and a lot of goofy mm-hmm. adults, you know. There, of course, there's the young boy wearing the NAMBLA approved micro shorts also. But along with that, there's a lot of very childlike adults. There's the kooky inventor and all these kind mm-hmm. of stock sort of 1960s, 70s.
The wacky fat guy.
Characters. Right. Wacky fat guy who reminds me of a lot of the kid with the painted on freckles in that Korean mm-hmm. Beta Man Mazinga V movie.
That's a whole trope of itself and has a whole history from those types of films, which is another podcast.
Right. Yeah, the theme, I'm really looking forward to our theme of fat kids in Korean straight-to-video children's movies. And as is the entire mm-hmm. audience, I'm sure.
It's like you think it's a joke, but we could.
We'll do. Yeah. Don't test us. Yeah. We'll do it. Now, this film was, definitely a big part of that Toho push to reach the young audience. And another part of that program was these matinee festivals, these things that Toho did called the Champion Festivals that they started in the 70s, which was basically would be a package of a couple films. Usually there would be a Godzilla film that had been edited down. They actually got Ishiro Honda on board to do the edits of these films, mm-hmm. to edit them down to sort of edit out some of the more
cut them down to around 75 content. Minutes or so.
Yeah, make them short for a younger attention span. Not that I ever think I had any kind of problem with the length of a Godzilla movie when I was 9 years old, but who knows. So these would typically consist of one edited down Toho Kaiju movie, then there'd be a new film that was a premiere, then there'd be cartoons, and often there would also be episodes of some of the Tsuburaya tokusatsu TV shows, you know, Mirror Man, one of the Ultraman series. And actually, this film, Daigoro versus Goliath, is a co-production between Tsuburaya and Toho. And I think it was actually meant to commemorate the 10th anniversary of Tsuburaya. Yeah. Is that? Yeah. That's right, right? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. If you want to see these edited children's versions, there was a Laserdisc release, I guess, in the 90s. And if you have eBay money, you can probably track it down.
That's some mad eBay money right there. And also they would retitle these movies, the Godzilla movies. And I actually found online a poster for the particular Champion Festival, which is one of the ones that was staged in 1972, where Daigoro versus Goliath was premiered, and what it was paired with was a re-edited version of Destroy All Monsters that had been retitled Godzilla Electric Battle Masterpiece, mm-hmm. which I don't know what they did to the film, but that, you know, that's an awesome title,
yeah,
I gotta
that
say.
Should be a real film's title. And when Godzilla
exactly.
rips out a guitar and challenges, you know, challenges the bad guys to rock.
Yeah, exactly. you know, but what was the Korean movie where the monster Gogo dances to like the Avengers guitar music? Oh well, never mind. It's lost. I'll never remember what that movie was. And the other movie that played as part of the festival was a new Miyazaki animated feature called Panda Go Panda, which is important. So basically the idea of these festivals was it was something that moms could drop their kids off to on a Saturday, and the kids would be occupied for the entire day so that the moms and maybe the dads too could spend the day shopping and support the Japanese super economy, which is, I think that's sort of the idea of matinees anywhere. Tars, did you have kiddie matinees in your hometown?
No, I think it was in the Midwest. There not really much of that in the smaller areas. And then I think I was too late for a lot of that. So most of my monster movie stuff was on TV, especially TBS's Super Scary Saturday and then Commander USA and a couple of the other old-timey national hosts. But then our local guy had retired, although he came back after I left for college. But
oh yeah, did you have like a count?
He had
or something like
name?
That.
I can't remember his name. I'll put it in post.
Okay, yeah, add it in post.
But
Dr. Yeah, like Goulardo
something
or something
or
like
something,
that.
But he owned a appliance store, so. Here's the set was with like washers and dryers and stuff. So
oh, that's awesome. Yeah, the first guy in San Francisco, we had this guy at first. I mean, the big guy was Bob Wilkins on Creature Features, but before that, there was a guy named Asmodeus who was sort of a beatnik, sort of a devil beatnik guy, and he used to smoke, which was really cool. I don't think you could get away with that, but we had a. Growing up in Berkeley, there were kidney matinees at the UC Theater in Berkeley, and I got dropped off at that more times than I can even say. So I remember seeing a lot of it was typical kiddie matinee fare. I remember seeing Captain Nemo in the Underwater City with Chuck Connors, but then there was also a lot of stuff that I mean it was the 70s, so you know when like you know a G rating meant you could sometimes see boobs. So very different from now, but I think I saw a lot of stuff that in the era of helicopter parenting wouldn't really be part of a program dedicated to kids. I mean, I remember seeing like Night of the Lepus, which has, you know, would be rated, you know, B for disturbing bunny violence and Theater of Blood with Vincent Price. A lot of Hammer stuff. Like, nothing, like, really hardcore. Like, you know, they didn't show us Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but probably stuff that would a lot of parents today would probably, you know, go to the Supreme Court over for issues of violence. But, you know, I turned out okay. It was part of my...
Yes, we turned out okay.
We turned out just fine. If they had showed Daigoro versus Goliath, it might have been a different story.
Yeah, we'd be doing this from different jails. So
exactly, you don't know what a man can be driven to.
So let's get right into Daigoro and Goliath and their great desperate monster battle. So
yes,
let's see. So Daigoro, let's start with Daigoro himself because it opens with Daigoro. He's basically a like a hippo cow looking monster who's like brown colored, and he's pretty much a lazy kid who wanders around.
He's kind of a generic, a genetic stew of a variety of completely non-threatening animals. He's kind of dog-like and hippo-like and like a cow, and all sort of filtered through sort of a Hello Kitty aesthetic. You know, he's
he'd
cute.
Be alongside Barney and friends singing about how he loves you.
Yeah. unfortunately.
If he spoke English and not random noises, so.
Yeah, he kind of mules. He almost has sort of an R2-D2 thing going on. He's sort of, and he is, and Daigoro, he's an orphan monster.
His mother, who had a more cat-like face with long hair, was attacking the city, and she's brutally killed because she's evil, and then they find Daigoro hidden away, and so the people of Japan decide to raise him on an island.
I do want to point out that Daigoro's mother is actually killed by the Japanese military with ballistic missiles, which I think is the only time in the history of kaiju cinema that a monster is killed by conventional military weaponry.
Yeah.
I mean, I might be wrong about that.
It's because the American Godzilla doesn't count, so...
Right, exactly.
Not a real monster, sorry.
Exactly. No, indeed. And also I wanted to say that the baby Daigoro looks a lot like something that was drawn by Matt Groening. He kind of looks like Grandpa Simpson, and he has these weird eyelids. But anyway, that's beside the point, and I'm sure we'll have a slideshow with this so people can see what the monsters look like.
Daigoro's day is basically wandering around the island, being hungry and trying to go to the bathroom, and then the
the whole bathroom aspect of, I mean, once you see this movie, all you're gonna ever say about it is like, oh yeah, that monster with the constipated you know, that movie with the constipated dinosaur in it. The idea is that the people of Japan decide to raise Daigoro and take care of him, give him a private island. But the problem is that Daigoro keeps growing and growing. And by the time we join Daigoro in progress, he's gotten quite large. Mm-hmm. And the cost of feeding him has gotten out of control, at least more than the government of Japan wants to pay. So they're rationing his food, which I also might add is his diet is very heavy on baguettes. He has like a private army of chefs who are always cooking stuff, and they feed him his food in this giant bowl, and it's always like a bunch of fruit and stuff, but like on top there's always like about 50 baguettes. Mm-hmm. So anyway, but not enough. So as a result of his diet, he's in a constant state of hunger. His stomach is always growling. And I first saw the film without subtitles, so I'm still going to say it's hard to like really, they don't really put a pinpoint on what his gastrointestinal issue is, but they do. Well, Daigoro does have a giant outhouse, or it's kind of a giant. Yeah, it's a giant outhouse, but it has like a saloon door on it, and as you mentioned, his toilet facilities are very kind of Victorian looking, like it has the chain hanging from the ceiling. But as we join Daigoro, there's a scene where his stomach's kind of growling, and he walks up to his outhouse, and then gets kind of all dejected and walk away, and then we have a close up, and we see that on the swinging door of the outhouse, a cobweb has grown, which tells us that, you know, it's been a long, long while since he's been to the outhouse. And, you know, and even without subtitles, that communicated that to me, which means that we are dealing with pure cinema here.
Yeah.
What can I say?
Yeah, you don't need to understand the language to understand the language of film.
Right, exactly. Or the language of
the language of abandoned outhouse. But,
Which is one that it seems like the Japanese are really into that kind of humor.
Yeah.
But you know, which is good. I don't judge. Hey, if it was good enough for Ozu, it's good enough for Daigoro. So what can I say?
So Daigoro does have some friends who try to raise money to feed Daigoro, and there are the wacky people who in most films would be considered annoying, but in this film I consider them really annoying. They include the wacky fat guy who I think he gives up drinking until Daigoro gets enough food, and then there's the inventor character who makes incredibly complicated inventions to try to win a prize to give the money to help feed Daigoro. And he hangs around children a lot, so,
isn't weird at all, because it's 1972, and that was totally okay. Yeah, the thing is that the whole Daigoro's whole plight has become sort of a cause célèbre throughout Japan. So the public has become very involved in, the fact that Daigoro doesn't have enough to eat. And sort of the measure in this movie of whether you're a good person or not is how much you care about the fact that Daigoro is hungry. So yeah, there's all these like school children are doing charity drives trying to raise money to feed Daigoro. And yeah, and there's the kooky inventor guy. And he keeps taking part in this contest, which in the subtitled version they call the Astonishing Invention Great Shock. Or that's the English trend. That's how the fan subbers translated it. So yeah, he's competing in the Astonishing Invention Great Shock so he can win the prize money to donate it towards feeding more baguettes to Daigoro.
Yeah, shockingly, all his inventions keep failing, so
Yeah, indeed. And then there's also the bungling bureaucrats who, there's some sort of mild social commentary in this, I gotta say, but very mild. But there's very, that we do have the bureaucrats, the government folks who don't want to feed Daigoro. They want to cut costs. And there's one guy who was actually the only, I mean, I don't know about you, but I only recognize this one actor in the whole movie, and it's Akiji Kobayashi, who played the captain of the science patrol in Ultraman. And here he plays the bumbling government toady who's actually there on the island with Daigoro, and he's the one who's trying to impose the rations on Daigoro's food. And he also wants to inject Daigoro with a serum, an anti-growth serum that will actually, I wasn't clear if it's supposed to make him stop growing or if it will actually reverse his growth. But the idea is for Daigoro to stay smaller so that they don't have to feed him as much. And then there's also the kindly sort of zookeeper, animal tender guy that's on the island who objects to this because he's come to really care about Daigoro because Daigoro is so awesome. So
And
there's
Daigoro
that.
even ruins his dates, though, but he's still on Daigoro's side.
Right. Yeah, there's the guy who can't get laid, but there's the but he'll learn somehow from Daigoro,
Yeah,
he'll learn
you would
how
think,
to
a
make his
giant monster
way.
would be the perfect opportunity to be like, "Hey, baby, we're gonna die anyway, so."
Right, exactly. Want to watch me feed some baguettes to Daigoro?
Check this out.
Works every time. So what's as far as the government is concerned, Daigoro has increasingly become a liability. So what this movie needs is for something to happen. Not that this is a cliche kind of hero's journey narrative or anything, but there needs to be some kind of threat that only Daigoro can meet. And so we have really long, it takes quite a long time for Goliath to show up in this movie. It's like, I think it was like 45 or 50 minutes into the movie. Not that I was counting or anything, but and we don't really know what Goliath is, do we? It doesn't seem like they really put a lot of backstory into Goliath. He just kind of shows up riding on an asteroid out of the.
Just some jerk who travels in space, and
Yeah, space jerk.
he comes to Earth and punches monsters and trashes stuff.
He has really good, he has the thing I liked about Goliath, the Goliath costume, was he has these really gigantic arms. Like he's like the anti-Tyrannosaurus Rex. It's like overcompensating for the T-Rex, where he's just got these, he's like this blue dinosaur but has these big Popeye arms. And another thing about this movie is it apparently began life, at least in the discussion stages, as a proposed Godzilla movie. But then quickly, it was decided that they were just going to make an original movie. But as a result of that, there were some rumors, there's some jibber jabber on the web and on the forums and stuff that the costumes used in the movies were actually designed for the Godzilla movie, which I think has been pretty decisively debunked. And I think if you see the costumes, there's no way that you'd ever believe meant for a Godzilla movie. They're pretty, I mean, especially Daigoro is very, he really does look like something out of maybe RoboCon or one of those kid tokusatsu series where the guy
His
gets
body is
caught.
the part of it was made out of a Red King costume from Ultraman.
Yeah.
So, but I think the head's all original, and I don't recognize any part on Goliath, but who knows?
Yeah, I don't either. But yeah, they probably, yeah, Tsuburaya, they had a large warehouse full of old monster costumes from all those Ultraman series, so I'm sure they cannibalized a lot of stuff. But anyway, yeah, Goliath comes down, big ol' arms, starts punching everything. I think the first thing he does is, fortuitously, his asteroid lands very close to Daigoro's island, and he just marches right onto Daigoro's island and kicks the living crap out of Daigoro.
And at that point, I'm all like, yes, hooray, and like cheering
Yeah.
for Goliath, but
Right. A hero has arrived.
end
Yeah.
us from this torment. Unfortunately, he doesn't actually kill Daigoro, he just wanders off.
Yeah, he wanders off to destroy a refinery, which is sort that's sort of the scale of this one. I mean, I thought the once they start having actual kind of kaiju movie scenes of destruction and monsters fighting, it's pretty good. I mean, it's not like outstanding. It's not like the days of like the early to mid 60s Godzilla films. It's sort of on the scale of one of the Tsuburaya TV shows. It's sort of like Ultraman where there's not a lot of emphasis on miniature sets. I think they just have that one refinery set that he trashes, and otherwise all the fights are staged on the island. It's kind of like Godzilla versus the Sea Monster, where all the fights were on that island, and there was just the one set of the villain's lair that gets destroyed. So they keep it very small scale, and they keep it very limited, which is smart because they're able to focus their resources on like a limited number of sets and situations, and it looks good. It's fine. It's definitely not, I'm trying to be charitable, but it's not, if you like, yeah, I mean, if it's just like watching Ultraman or Mirror Man or one of those or Red Baron or one of those kind of shows. They never did a lot of like city destruction on those shows because it was expensive to
I've
build those
definitely seen
sets.
worse TV shows of tokusatsu stuff than this movie, but.
So the issue then, once Goliath is there, is that it sort of turns into Son of Godzilla at this point. It's sort of a rehash of, or Godzilla's Revenge, where it's sort of a rehash of that whole idea of that Daigoro is not really a natural brawler. He's just grown up alone, being pampered and fed by the humans, but now it's time for him to kaiju up and protect the world from Goliath. And so all the well-meaning, dopey, kooky human characters get together to train him, and there's actually kind of a training, not a training montage, but they do kind of train him to be more monster-like. And there's even a part where he's learning to breathe fire, very much like Minya, and to roar and to be more threatening.
I think
So
this
and
might
this
be
is,
before they invented the training montage, so it's a the
yeah,
precursor.
yeah. Yeah, definitely. If it was done today, there'd definitely be,
It'd
it
be
would be
set
a
to a bad
montage. It would
rock
be a
song
montage.
and
Yeah, we could probably be mad about that. But God, I don't want to spoil this movie for people because you're probably all just thinking, "Well, God, what happens? I mean, I have to see this. Does Daigoro win? Against all odds, does he beat the evil monster from outer space?" Well, I don't know. I don't know. Should we tell them? I don't know about that, but
Okay, I'll spoil it. Yes. Goliath kills Daigoro and eats his body.
oh,
So.
exactly. And makes love to the
Yes.
corpse.
Yes.
It becomes like sort of this horrible CSI scenario where there's all body
But
fluids
luckily, while he's
everywhere.
doing that, the humans have enough time to build a rocket around him and blast him back into space. So it's just
Right.
sec.
Class. Classic Japanese ending where you know, Goliath has been nothing but trouble, has destroyed this refinery, probably killed a bunch of people in the process, but then in the end they strap his ass to a rocket and shoot him off into space, and all the kids are like, bye Daigoro, bye bye,
That's
bye
someone
bye.
else's problem. Ha ha.
Exactly. Now Daigoro has been turned into this happy frog. But anyway.
Yeah.
So yeah, and then in the course of all that, of course, the human characters learn lessons as well, and the guy who has bad luck with the girls learns to have a little bit more courage and to make a move on the girl that he has a crush on because of Daigoro's show of courage and the way Daigoro has changed, has come of age.
It's a message in the film about maturity and telling the little kids who watch it that they need to grow up and be, you know, a little bit more mature so they can watch the other Toho Godzilla productions and spend all their money.
And they have to, kick some ass.
Yeah.
It's an anti-bullying message, but it's an anti-bullying message in 1972 style.
Unfortunately, the anti-bullying efforts went too far, and the Tsukiban films were formed. And so, yeah.
Right. But do any of the Tsukiban films end with the evil schoolgirl being tied to a rocket and blasted into outer space?
I've not seen all of them yet, but...
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I guess it is possible. But that's the true anti-bullying measure. Blast the bullies into space and don't let them come back until they said they're sorry. So yeah, that's I will say about this movie, the first time I watched it, like I said, I watched it without subtitles. Yeah. I didn't know what to expect. I just knew it was I had expectations based on the fact that it was a Tsuburaya and Toho giant monster film. So with the expectations that engendered, the movie did come as kind of a slap in the face. It was not what
I expected it to be, like, too cool for America. And then, we get it and we're like, you know, sometimes things shouldn't be imported to America and should stay in Japan.
Right. I think they may have actually been embarrassed about this one, but I guess I had some of that too. That this was going to be the hardcore stuff.
But if you want to see Daigoro versus Goliath, this is actually not as hard to find as some of our other films. You can get the unsubtitled official DVD release in Japan, which is region 2 or whatever, or you can also see the fan sub version on YouTube while it's up until Toho files a copyright claim, which they do all the time. So,
So not that we'd recommend that, but I actually watched that subtitled version. It was the subs were quite good. It looked good. And that's what I was going to say is watching it a second time in preparation for this podcast, when I came to it knowing what to expect, it was all right. I'm surprised to hear myself saying this, but I kind of come down on the side of this movie. It's, you know, it's kind of charming. It's definitely uncynical. Yeah. You know, its heart's in the right place. If if you can just kind of ratchet down, you know, your tolerance for this kind of whimsical goofiness, it's not bad.
Yeah,
it's
I saw it as a kid, I would have loved it, because like Godzilla's Revenge, it's one of my favorite Godzilla films, even though, you know, just because I was the same age as the kid when I first saw it. So and I understand how it works. I know these kids type stuff. A lot of the Godzilla fans now are like, oh, these are horrible. We want our dark, violent Godzilla films. And it's like, you know, those exist because people like us watched these as kids and grew up with them and help keep them be popular enough for to finance the 80s and 90s stuff. So
the people who grew up watching the Jun Fukuda Godzilla movies ended up making the emo Godzilla movies where the monsters have feelings and there's like a psychic girl to tell us all about them. But I mean, and I gotta say, I actually, you know, I of course like the Honda Godzilla movies, but I really like the Jun Fukuda Godzilla movies. You know, my Godzilla vs. the Sea Monster was the first Godzilla movie I ever saw, and you know, and I was like 8 or something, and what 8-year-old wouldn't love that movie? So of course I have a strong attachment to it. But I also, Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla is one of my favorites of the Godzilla series too. Yeah. So again, compared to Daigoro, those are like Roman pornos, you know, it's like very whole different ball game. But you know, you gotta just ratchet down your expectations. Mm-hmm. You know, that it one of our consistent messages of the Infernal Brains and also of our respective websites and blogs is that it always pays to ratchet down your expectations. Yep. And this is definitely a case where that applies.
Yeah. So, yeah, so if this seems like it's up your alley, feel free to try to track it down. If it doesn't, I'm sure our next episode will have something cool that you'll want to track down. And
I'm not sure of that. I just want to interject there and say I don't want to. I'm glad you're optimistic about it. I hope that it does.
Yeah. Well, I like sure to make promises I'll disavow later. So,
yeah. All right, I'm down with that.
Yep.
All right. Well, I think we've stomped Daigoro versus Goliath into the ground, at least as far as I'm concerned. Okay.
Before we go, if anyone else out there does podcasts and wants to trade podcast promos, feel free to email one of us through our respected websites. Please try to keep your promo to around 90 seconds or less, just because we don't have unlimited time.
All right. And keep in mind that you will be trading for a promo for our podcast, not some other podcast. I just want to make sure that people know what they're getting into.
And don't bite off more than you can chew.
Right. It's not. We're not going to trade you a promo for Monster Island Resort. It is going to be, you're going to have to put your name behind the Infernal Brains. If you are man or woman enough to do that.
Yeah. Be like Daigoro.
Guide you up to the task.
Okay, and I think that's it for now. So until next time in next genre, the Infernal Brains are signing off.
See ya.